So we are now recording.
Good.
So I'm standing in for Tamara today. It's Don Dugan-Hass from the Paleontological Research Institution and its Museum of the Earth. And we'll start in the typical way and just ask if folks have anything new and exciting to report. Been enjoying Mark's updates from the conference. What are folks up to?
This is Karen Holweg, and I'm interested to know if anybody's heard from Gary Brosh recently, because I read in my paper that in Vanuatu, which is, I think, where Gary is now, there was a cyclone.
Oh, no, really?
Yeah.
Uh-oh, that's not good.
Has anybody heard from him?
No, I heard as he was headed there, but that was it.
That is where he's headed, right?
Yes, I think so.
Okay.
Let me do a little check-in on the website here. And
yeah, that's what I was just doing,
too. Out about the
last time I heard from him after, I thought it was after he had arrived there, he was talking about their primitive quarters and how unaffluent in general the community was. And so I can just imagine what a cyclone would do in that sort of, you know, not really sound structures and
not having cyclone resistant structures and such.
Right.
Technical.
Well, there's nothing scary on his website.
About that.
Okay. Well, at least one of us ought to email him just to see if we can make contact. I don't want a whole bunch of us to do it. I'll be glad to do it if
I was just doing it right now myself.
Good. Okay.
There we
thanks.
Go. Done.
Got to look after our own.
That's right.
That's right.
Absolutely.
What else are folks up to?
Just trying to keep ahead of everything and rolling along.
All right. Well, go ahead.
Oh, there is good news about the NASA Glory satellite that was supposed to go up last week but had technical difficulties. Glory is going to measure two things. It's going to continue our measurements of the radiation or solar energy coming in from the sun, and perhaps most importantly, it's going to do a detailed measurement of the aerosols and type of aerosols around the globe on a continuous basis. And aerosols are one of our biggest unknowns when it comes to the climate models. That should be launched on Friday.
Cool.
Wow. Important coverage.
Mm-hmm.
I just said that that's important coverage for us, for data sets and all kinds of very important reasons.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Any other things to report? Do we want to hear about report debriefing from the AAAS meeting last week, which I understand
if
you have
guys are ready, I'm
there.
Ready.
Yeah, hey. I'm ready.
Well, I attended the AAAS meetings in D.C. last week. It's been a whirlwind of time. And I attended a lot of sessions dealing with global climate change, which was pretty enlightening. The scientists I listened to in general emphasized how the uncertainty for global climate change data has been reduced considerably, and that IPCC predictions for climate change made in the most recent report were actually conservative. So they're projecting an increased rate of change for sea level rise, global surface temperatures. That was interesting. there was quite a lot of discussion about the need for adaptation strategies, mm-hmm. both for human societies and ecological systems. And so there was quite a bit of discussion about whether we should spend a lot of time and effort in saving endangered ecosystems or just let them go, because global climate change is so big that any effort, for instance, to eradicate invasive species from an ecosystem may be overridden by shifting ecosystems. So it was quite interesting to listen to all that and listen and partake in the discussion.
And any questions about that? That's the first time I've heard this discussion. The impacts are so tremendous that we can't even really start to deal, you know, can't create adaptation strategies that are, you know, make any sense to even contemplate. I mean, never mind financially, it's just simply not technically possible to preserve some of the ecosystems.
That was interesting discussion. It was, and I don't think a scientist would have dared to say anything like that 5 years ago. So attitudes are changing.
Yeah.
I think the enormity of climate change and its impacts is really getting to people. They're pondering that. They feel that we're really close to a global tipping point. And that was across the board, from scientists who study changes in the ocean to scientists who are studying changes on the land. It was kind of dire.
It is.
Yeah. Well, thanks for that.
So
bit of cheeriness.
What's that?
I said thanks for that bit of cheeriness.
Oh, you're very welcome. Well, it's not like we should just bury our faces in
no.
the sand, but it's better to be knowledgeable and to get ready for changes that are likely to come, and to keep pushing the message that we need to change our lifestyles.
Yeah, but how do you get ready for a massive reduction in the diversity of species and all the disruptions to ecosystems? I don't know how to get ready for that. I don't know what that means.
I guess be resolved to having it happen. Otherwise, you could be overwhelmed with sadness. I think that was part of the message.
I have a question. What conference was this discussion at? And as far as the overwhelming part, are they saying perhaps that the adaptation strategy concentration should be on human societies and human social structures and stuff like that, and instead of trying to save the ecosystems themselves? I know that we're reliant on the ecosystems, but you probably catch my drift.
Yeah.
It was both. So, for instance, say you're involved with ecosystem reconstruction. It would be wise to concentrate on species, on planting and establishing species that are, for instance, at their northern extent, if you're in a northern habitat. Therefore, you'd have species that would be adapted to possibly drier conditions or warmer conditions over time. So that would be smart. So where I'm at in Virginia, I might not want to plant pines, but I could be planting cypress trees.
Yeah.
They'll grow here now, and they'll likely grow here 50 years. Made.
Yep.
Interesting.
So, yeah, so that's interesting.
That's a very interesting strategy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what conference was it?
This was the American Association for the Advancement of Science.
Okay.
So
thank you.
Typically about 10,000 scientists from across the country in every discipline you can imagine attend. That's the society that publishes the journal Science.
Right.
Yep.
Was this their annual conference?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a fantastic conference to attend if you can ever swing it. because the talks are geared towards the general science audience.
Mm-hmm.
And so when talks are given, say, in a field that's outside your own, you'll be able to follow it because the speakers give, well, they avoid esoteric jargon, and they give good background information so that you can follow along. Sort of like the journal Bioscience does with their articles.
Right.
So it's fabulous. You can just bop around from field, you know, scientific field to field, and pick up on what's being said.
Right.
And so it's a great way to learn what's happening at the front edge of science, not only in the United States but around the world. There's a lot more emphasis on international collaboration and knowledge sharing. So that was interesting as well. And so next year, the meetings are going to be held in Vancouver. And the theme, the theme for the meeting is Flattening the World, Building the 21st Century Global Knowledge Society. So the emphasis will be on the interconnectedness of different scientific disciplines, so basically skirting through the boundaries that have been typical to date. And so they're emphasizing topics that are interdisciplinary by nature. Of course, climate change is right up at the top. Agriculture, biodiversity, economics, innovation, development, global health, education, renewable energy, population are other areas of emphasis.
Hi.
So I attended the meeting of the education section for AAAS and put forward an idea for a proposal that our group could take the lead on. And the title of my proposal is Global Climate Change Science Education Principles, Communication, and Practice. These are all working ideas. But essentially what I propose is that our symposium would have four main parts. One, to talk about the foundations of climate change science literacy. What does it mean to be literate in climate change science? So, of course, those are our climate literacy principles. And what's our current science knowledge in climate change? Basically, what are the perspectives of the general populace? So the Yale Project on Global Climate Change Communication, their paper about the six Americas, that would be, or something like that could plug in. And then the next would be communicating global climate change. What are strategies to get people to actually listen and absorb the data, ponder it, think about how it might impact them personally, and get involved? And of course, leading to how can we support educators, including climate change science in K-12 curriculum? And then from there, setting up all that foundation, then having two or three speakers that give examples of how they're integrating climate science education into practice.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be in different sectors. So a K-12 educator, perhaps someone from NASA, how are they integrating? What's their strategy to get climate science data out to the public and to the K-12 community? And then that would be followed up by a 30-minute discussion and question period, which is very popular at these meetings. So that's my proposal to date.
That sounds great, Candace.
Yeah,
it does.
Yeah.
How was that received? Did you present this to the education group then?
I did just briefly, and then they told me to send it to them via email, and so I did. And the chair of the committee said that it was very well developed.
Who is the chair of the committee?
Who is the chair of the committee? Get that for you in a minute. His name is Krasik.
Joe Krasik.
Yes.
Yeah.
Michigan.
Okay. Yep.
R-A-Y-J.
Yeah.
C-I-K.
Yep.
Yeah. But he's outgoing. He's the outgoing chair.
Oh, yeah.
And I can't remember who the ingoing chair is. And so the proposal for the symposium is due April 26th.
Right, Candace, do you want to submit a more developed one where we have more input from folks that are usually on this call on Climate Literacy Network?
Oh, sure.
Yeah,
absolutely. I really would appreciate are, you know, not only suggestions about the overall format and flow, but speakers.
Yes, exactly. So it could be specifically suggest certain people that would be perfect for those kinds of.
Yeah, exactly. And that would be wonderful. Because when the proposal is submitted, the more sure you are about who's going to speak,
yes,
the better chance you have of having it be accepted. So I'm proposing that the symposium would be 180 minutes,
okay,
so 3 hours.
Right. And we've done certainly similar kinds of things, certainly at NAAEE, and not so much at AGU, but this is obviously something that we want to be able to do. I guess NSTA has similar kinds of things.
Right.
But your point is, I think, and especially the description of the meeting in Washington, is it's almost a different kind of audience. It's not primarily teachers. It's not primarily researchers who are looking for, you know, the most esoteric stuff in their field and all that you would maybe at AGU. This is a much more general kind of science audience, so it's a good venue for us to get message of what this group has been doing and how we see climate change education in the country.
Exactly, and my main goal for this is to encourage the scientists who are conducting climate change research to get involved in the communication and outreach process.
Right. So that would be really the focus. Then it's not.
Right.
How do you get involved
in the
outreach education part of it? Yeah.
Exactly. That's the focus. And they recognize, and several of the researchers talked about how they aren't typically involved with a lot of outreach. They don't communicate to the general public well.
Yes.
They would like to, and they recognize how critical it's becoming to communicate what they know.
Yes.
And so I think we're set. It would be good timing for us to do this.
Absolutely. So how do people think? Sorry, Don, I'm kind of jumping in here.
No, that's fine. You go for it, man.
Well, Candace and I talked about this about, what, was it 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago?
A couple weeks ago.
So we've also exchanged some emails on this. I'm just curious how we proceed on this. I want to make sure that, you know, as many people get involved in maybe drafting something for the end of April, that as Candace suggested, that this be as solid as we can make it and as specific, has a really good chance of being accepted.
Yeah, and I think, too, that targeting AAAS is a very good idea, because I think places where we've presented before is... a lot of it is talking to folks who are already on the inside, sort of. And AAAS is a broader audience.
Yeah.
And I think we ought to be thinking about who else. You know, should we get to the National Council of Social Studies at some point?
Yeah, maybe.
You know, actually think about a conferencing strategy that helps get conversations started with people that we're not already talking with.
It's an interesting idea. Is literally think of what we're doing, not sort of conference by conference, but then there's a whole group of ones that we want to do, so that we truly have a strategy for all of them. That's an interesting notion.
I think that's a really good question, and I'd like to throw out to the group, we know AAAS has the
science literacy atlas that they produced.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's available on the National Digital Science Library. And it's my understanding that they are working on a climate section as well. I think Tamara talked about that on a prior conversation.
Yep, that's what, part of that project, and yes, indeed. And in fact, we haven't talked about it here, but I think the intention is to have that ready, at least a draft, in draft form by May. Mary,
what's
the timing on that one? Because that was part of the meeting in Boston last week.
There was one version available at the AAAS meeting as a handout, so that might have been a preliminary version.
Probably Ted Willard would be, or Frank Niepold, yeah. Other person who.
I would say Frank Niepold or Ted Willard would know better than anybody
else.
Yeah.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I mentioned that in my proposal, mm-hmm. and also I suggested Frank Niepold would be a good speaker for the foundations.
Yes.
You know what I'm wondering, given the audience and some of Mark McCaffrey's recent emails, mm-hmm. is whether we could find a scientist who has really done a bang-up job with public presentations as one of the people that would be a speaker.
Yeah, that would be good. Very good. Excellent.
Just so there was an exemplary scientist who communicates well. And there's only, this is Karen Holweg.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of scientists that have gotten involved in this here in Boulder, but so there may be some from that pool that we could recommend or others might have other ideas. But the thing that I keep thinking about as I'm trying to figure out how to communicate this more clearly to people and get the deniers on board is the case study that I have to work with is my brother-in-law.
How often that is the case?
Who's an
Karen.
Who's an engineer and he has been a denier for years, but this year what has piqued his interest and brought him over from the dark side is weather.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And he has been following these huge storms that have come raging across the Pacific and dumped record-breaking amounts of moisture in California. And he now talks very conversantly about, you know, if the ocean's warmer and there's more evaporation, these storm fronts are going to continue to have more extreme weather events everywhere.
Exactly.
And so I'm wondering if, that's just sort of a brain dump of my reactions to what you've been talking about, but it seems to me somebody who can speak convincingly about messages that penetrate for the public.
And how to do it, how to take your data.
Well, it may not be such a science-oriented kind of presentation, but more of a popular presentation.
Yeah, well, anecdotes backed up by data.
Right. Sort of the flip side, not starting from the data, but starting from observations that everybody can make.
Yeah. One other thought here is, you know, it has taken a Carl Sagan or a Stephen Jay Gould, who are these fabulous scientists who also take on public speaking and speaking to the masses. Sometimes there's risks involved in that to their scientific careers.
Right.
And I'm not sure how that should be addressed to the audience. But I'm betting you at AAAS, if there's climate scientists, they're going to be having that in their minds, as well as, you know, how to communicate to the public. I don't know how that should be addressed.
Yeah. Well, I've been listening to a series of podcasts from David Suzuki, who is sort of the Canadian equivalent, in a way, anyway, of Carl Sagan. He's actually, he's wonderful. I believe he's a PhD biochemist from 30 years ago, but he's really been an environmental journalist, and we've got no one like him in the States. And I think if we want a good communicator to the public, he's a good one.
So, Don, I mean, I don't actually know Suzuki personally, but he was certainly part of, I was at UBC while he was there. He's actually a geneticist. He's based in Vancouver.
That's right. That's right. There we go. I forgot
he's
that.
He's local. Yeah. Everyone knows him in Canada. He's been doing a science program for probably almost 30 years. He has certainly paid a career price for it, but he felt very strongly that he had a role as a scientist to be communicating science to the general public, and that was the choice he's made. And he talks about that. There's no question that there was some consequences for him. He's well past that.
Yeah, no, he's a full-time environmental journalist now.
Suzuki under this umbrella, that would be a huge draw.
Yeah,
a great idea.
He's fabulous. I'll send a link to the series that I've been listening to. It's called The Bottom Line, and it's about what's the environmental bottom line for the economy, more or less. And it's great. I will send
David
out the link
Suzuki
for that.
Suzuki might be a good pick for the discussant. Mm-hmm. The role of the discussant is to pick up on the overarching theme of the symposium in about 10 minutes, speak to that, and summarize what the speakers have talked about. And so that might be a really good role for somebody of his stature.
I'm trying to think of who I know that would be able to talk to him sort of on a personal level, because I'm sure he gets all kinds of requests to.
Yeah, but you're right. He is in Vancouver, and so is AAAS, and AAAS is kind
of a. So he's going to get a lot of requests,
so.
I guess.
Very well be a keynote speaker for the whole conference.
Right,
there's no question. But this is an interesting role, is to suggest to him that a role as a discussant, it's sort of to summarize for folks what they've heard. And, as now, an amazing sort of science reporter, he would be wonderful at doing that. And that might be sort of a secondary thing that he could do in the conference. So that's, and I'm sure he would be very interested in that. And I'm just trying to think of who I know that can get to him. I live in Vancouver, as I said, at University of British Columbia. So I'm actually trying to think of who my colleagues are there that may be able to ask him about this. So that's a great idea, is to have someone like Suzuki there.
Yeah, he'd be wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great, great question. Is that Joe?
Yes, do you have any game players? The Fate of the World has just been reissued. They had a beta, but is a online video game about climate change. It's called Fate of the World.
Mm. Fate of the World?
Fate of the World. It's $10.
Oh. Sorry, Scott.
Now, Joe, what's your experience with the previous versions of it? Do you find it very useful?
I didn't really have a chance to play with it. It was on the wrong computer. But you can. They just sent me an email last night, and I think you can go on there and test out a few things just to play with a little bit, and then you have to pay your $10. That particular company has gotten very good reviews on their video game. So I just passed that along for what it's worth. Probably those under 25 would appreciate it most.
Well,
those under 25 aren't going to pay $10 for it. They'll figure out a way to download it for nothing.
Yeah, that's right.
Well,
Maybe we could find a sponsor to give it away for free.
There you go. Yeah.
Get it out there. Anything, I know certainly Mary and I are both been reviewing a lot of climate change resources and in the last over a year, and there's not a whole lot of things where you can kind of get the whole big picture and how all the pieces fit together.
Right.
That would be very interesting to see what the gamers are coming up with and whether a lot of it has some of the science in it and whether it's engaging and it becomes just another venue of getting some of these ideas out to people and they understand the import of all of this, like the relationship to extreme weather. Because, of course, the deniers say, well, it's been such a cold winter and all that kind of stuff, and you know, the rest of us are saying, you know, this is just the beginning. It's just so much moisture, so much energy in the atmosphere now. Well, that'll be good. I'm going to look for that. Thanks, Joe, for that idea, too.
It's gotten lots of reviews, one of which is in the New York Times, so you can do it that way.
Okay.
I read it in the New York Times, right?
Scott, I think we should both check this out and see if we could get a demo try or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe we could get them to present it at a future call.
There you go. Perfect.
That's
perfect.
A great idea.
Absolutely.
Because this is exactly, you know, just as I was saying, it's exactly the kind of thing that we need to do is this is, again, another audience that we want to talk with. And if it is the under 25, that's great. We know what the under 25-year-olds can do, especially in the Mideast these days.
Yes.
That's where change will happen. It always does.
I know. Hmm.
Have any of us looked at any groups of the younger set that might be on Facebook, and mm-hmm. is there a climate change group on Facebook? I've kind of kept off of it, but I'm wondering if anyone else has looked at that.
It's a good idea. I haven't looked at it.
Well, there are.
Gary's looking at the other person who's often on this call is Doug Cohen, who also works a lot with young people. So that's a good question for both of them.
There are certainly various organizations that do climate change stuff that have a strong presence on Facebook. Like the David Suzuki Foundation for one, I'm trying to remember the Post Carbon Institute. It regularly posts some great stuff. So there certainly is a presence there at all kinds of scales.
John, if you and others have, you know of some of those pages, just let me know and I'll just put them up on our website. Mm-hmm. So at least we can link people into those.
Nice.
Possibilities. So yeah, just and that goes for anything that people think makes sense to have up on that website. Certainly easy enough to put things up there as links.
Yeah, well, the Museum of the Earth actually posts carbon related or climate related stuff with some regularity on Facebook.
Yes. So. Yeah, and that's something that I haven't had an opportunity to do is to really link to a lot of the existing materials. We really haven't gotten to that point, but yeah, that's exactly what should be up there.
Yeah, and I actually have sort of a a nebulously defined deadline for writing a blog post for Facebook and education.
Okay.
Which has a pretty sizable following. Facebook and education group was started by several Facebook employees, kind of in their downtime to figure out how to use Facebook best in education. And so I virtually know one of the leaders of that group. And like I said, have this nebulously defined deadline for writing something that's not related to climate science, but I could certainly get that. I should probably get that done before making the plug for having somebody from this group.
maybe we need to sign you up for the program on the 1st of April or something.
Yes.
or actually, some of the folks who are involved using Facebook in this way is, you know, social media and the role of social media in communicating climate change information.
Mm-hmm.
Something we haven't talked so much about here, and that might be a really interesting thing for us to.
The topic that I'll be writing about is somewhat related. It's I was asked to do it because I responded to a posting in their group of a New York Times article a while ago on how people are using Facebook to reconnect with teachers from 10, 20, 30 years ago. And I was surprised in all the commentary on the Facebook and Education page that none of the people who responded talked about how to take advantage of that reconnection and continue to teach the content that they taught by maintaining or reestablishing that connection with their former students. You know, assuming that teachers have some passion about the content that they teach, then there's a real advantage to continuing that relationship for continuing to educate after they leave your classroom. And so that's the topic of the post I'm going to write, and a lot of that will, you know, a lot of what I do with my former students on Facebook is keep them up to date on climate science and climate literacy.
That's great.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, another networking piece of that is how much the colleges and universities are emphasizing their alumni networks these days.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And I don't know how we might be able to use that, but there's a huge network base there.
Yeah.
Indeed.
So that's a really interesting communication strategy. They're all over, of course, the country in all kinds of disciplines and professions.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So dream about that, and someone, you guys think about that. how do you leverage alumni networks?
Yeah.
I can tell you one thing we did, but you have to be careful with this, is my husband put together CDs with a lot of the scientific reports, the climate change reports, as well as his summaries of some of those, and sent them out to our university's alumni based on the catalog, the Uh-oh. University catalog. But you got to be Whoa. Really careful, because... Well, you can reach thousands of people this way, okay?
Right.
However, what you have to be really, really careful about is not crossing the policy of access to that information.
Right.
Like, yeah. You can't advocate. You can educate. You probably end up with a little trouble with that, but if you advocate, you get in real trouble.
Yeah.
Because then that's sort of an invasion of privacy thing.
Yeah, this is a classic problem. I know we had a meeting in April or in December where we talked about this sort of distinction between education and advocacy with respect to climate change.
It's very huge.
I actually put up, I think it's on it's actually on the Climate Literacy Network discussion page. I put that was one of the questions that was raised, and I started a little thing there, and added one of the ways that I've actually used or come down on the question is just using the IRS distinction between advocacy and education. And it's if you actually look at sort of the interpretive bulletins they put out, it's actually quite useful to see at least how they view the difference between education and advocacy, because it has a distinction for your status as a not-for-profit. So I sort of felt like it maybe is useful for us to use the same kind of distinction as each of the starting points. It's tricky. It's really
excellent.
Yeah. So if you, I mean, that's certainly one place folks can look. I just simply, you know, cut and paste it from one of the interpretive circulars, and that's at least a start. And if there's more commentary, we want to have a discussion. That's certainly a place for this group to continue to discuss those distinctions. That's going to come up over and over again. It's how far. Well, these are some great ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Other thoughts? Other things that we ought to know about from the AAAS meeting?
Not that I can think of.
So, how do we sort of start, you know, basically developing this draft? Is this something that we can circulate? Are you willing to circulate that?
Yeah, I'll send it out to the network and ask for some thoughts.
Yeah, that's probably the best way. Any ideas? Any other ideas? Is that the best way for us to do this? When we've done the NAAEE, we sort of had a document, and I think it's actually ended up being sort of conference calls. We certainly used some of these times to do that, and even beyond, to sort of focus on what we would be proposing for particular conferences. So that might, you know, certainly a model for us to use here. Luckily, we have a little bit of time.
Yeah, we do.
When's the deadline? Mid-April?
April 26th.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So I'll get it out right away. And
that would be great, because I just think it's so important for us to have a strong presence there, and I just really appreciate you taking the leadership on this campus.
Oh, you're welcome. I think it's important, too.
Yes.
So I've done a symposium. I've organized a symposium for AAAS in the past. So
okay.
I've been lucky once.
Yeah. There's a lot of competition for time. There's no question. But this is so in keeping with the overall theme. So
I think it's a perfect fit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and I again think that as we think about this, it would be good to sort of pull back and think about a big conferencing strategy and really figuring out who are the people that we ought to be talking to that we haven't talked to yet.
Yes.
Yeah, I
right.
think that's a great idea.
Yeah.
Well, as we get good at this, too, it's who are we talking to? What are the best things to share with them with best practices?
Mm-hmm.
And who have we sort of keep a handle on who have we reached and who have we not as far as those six Americas?
Mm-hmm.
And what are the other conferences that would help us reach some of those groups?
Yeah.
Yeah, those are all great questions to ponder.
Yeah, I think we need to write a little bit of a paper for ourselves so that we can put all those ideas in one place. And, that's a great idea. Good.
Well, that was a good discussion there. Are we done?
It sounds like it.
All right.
This is great.
Yeah, lots of good stuff to think about.
I'm now starting to look at the Speed of the World website, so I'm eager to look at the trailer.
All right, good. Well,
Speed of the World,
everyone.
Go play, everybody.
All right.
Yeah, sounds like fun.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
Oh, and Scott, should I send you the recording?
Yes, that would be great, Don.
Okie doke.
I wonder whether we want to put a few notes together.
Really take any.
I don't know if you wrote some up. No. I've got a couple here.
Okay. Yeah, we could do that. And I also, I did not get your original email that which I haven't read, but I peeked at while we were talking.
Okay.
I
well, I just You're so good about responding to stuff. So
yeah, I was puzzled. And it when I brought it up in Gmail, it brought up the old message in all gobbledygooky HTML. So I don't know if that's why I didn't get it before, but I didn't get it.
Okay.
So what's it say?
So I thought I'd better send it again.
Yeah.
Well, but we can talk about that sometime later. Not today, though,
okay.
For me.
Tomorrow's okay.
Better.
All right.
We can do that.
Yeah, tomorrow's probably better for me, too.
Okay, well, that's great. Well, thanks, Doc.
All right.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you all.
Very good. Thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.